Right now it is time to join our friends, David and Marcy from TheBerkshireEdge.com. TheBerkshireEdge.com is your one stop, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to find out what's going on in South County and the whole surrounding area, TheBerkshireEdge.com. And once again, let's say good morning to David and Marcy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Morning. Good morning.
So it's balmy, and it sounded like we're in a tropical paradise here.
Well, you know, it is because we had, last week we had 4 days at my house of 32-degree weather, and that forced the earliest start of the furnace ever.
Yes.
And the earliest bringing in of the plants ever. And you know what? The plants aren't going back out, and the furnace is not going back off.
However, you know, we do have a weekly column from a master gardener named Ron Kowalski.
Yeah.
And he has said that that the first frost was actually quite typical, that it's usually around September 20th. So, and that's about what we had.
Yeah.
So this is not atypical for the first frost, but I guess what's interesting is that it's getting warm again.
Well, the interesting thing was, we do get cold days, but it's very rare you get 3 or 4 days in a row in like the second week of September that stays in the 30s. And it just, you know what? And the older I get, the less tolerant I get of it. So anyway, well, let's take a look at some of the stories.
I'm glad to see your complaint.
Yeah, that's right. We'll see what stories we have that we'll talk about. First of all, we'll start off with story number one, where the schools in Great Barrington reopened with remote learning models. But October 5th is the date where it's a hybrid model in which half the students will be in class 4 days a week. That's what we have right now in the Region 1 at Housatonic Valley Regional High School.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder... I didn't ask our superintendent, but I wonder if he had consulted with, neighboring, regional school districts to determine what they were doing, because they're just making this up out of whole cloth. They just really...
I think that
they never had to do this before.
I think you're right. I think the superintendents have checked with other superintendents in and around their area, especially when you're talking about the southern regional. It's so close to Region 1 I think they would. And Region 1, of course, started off with the hybrid model. So I think that, how's it going? Is it blah, 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 blah? So I would think that there was some conversation between those superintendents.
Yeah. But in any case, they're going to have a hybrid model where they're combining face-to-face learning with it will take effect in October 5th. The school committee decided that October 5th, they're going to be remote learning until then. And then they're going to try to introduce face-to-face learning if it's seems to be safe at that time.
Yeah, what they do at Region 1, half the students go to school on Monday and Tuesday and Thursday and Friday. Wednesday the school is closed for a deep cleaning. And that's the way the hybrid model works at Housatonic.
But you know, there's a real problem with that. I mean, I saw a scientist on PBS last night who was, there seems to be more and more evidence that the danger of this pandemic is through the air. And not so much, and so deep cleaning is really not as important as investing in better ventilation systems in the schools.
Right.
And if they would take the money that they were spending in deep cleaning and have better ventilation, we might be able
I think those are major construction. That's a major construction project. That they'd have to build into.
Otherwise, this is going to go on endlessly.
Well, they have to build this into the school budgets sooner or later. The air ventilation systems. I mean, it'll happen in every school district, and it's things that taxpayers will just have to understand. And I think most taxpayers will understand that something like that is investing in education. It's not like investing in a piece of equipment. It is investing in the safety of your sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters that go to school to learn and also go to school to interact with other people like they're going to have to do in society. It's just one of those catch-22s. What can you do?
Well, rehabbing a school's ventilation system is,
yeah,
you know, it's one thing if you're building a new school and you can build it in. It's another if it's an older building, as many of our school buildings in New England are. The retrofit is quite.
It's more expensive than it's more expensive than if you build
and
a new school.
Absolutely. Too.
All right. Well, this is
anyway.
I want to go on to the next story because I'm going to make a prediction on your next story. I predict.
Wait a minute. I got to write this down.
I predict that the select board will at their next meeting vote for the approval of the hangars at the airport based on information that was supplied by the Planning and Zoning Commission. I think that they've been putting it off and putting it off and giving residents of that area a chance to speak. But I really, you know, when you look at this at the PNZ and you look at what some other people have said, most people tend to agree that the things that the people that surround the airport that live there are worried about aren't really reflected in having the hangars.
Well, I agree. This has been going. Listen, this has been going on for decades.
Yeah.
Every time somebody wants to improve the airport, the neighbors there, and they're not. They're just a handful of people. Complain bitterly about the noise and traffic and so on and so forth. And it's true that we have this kind of sleepy little airport, so called. But it's not Hartford.
It's not Hartford, and they're not expanding the runway and stuff.
They're just adding some hangars.
That's
to protect
it.
See, a lot of the planes, if you drive out there, a lot of the planes are in on tie downs.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, as you drive along the airport.
That's my prediction. Let's see whether it's correct or not. I think this is going to be what happened finally with naming the school after W.E.B. Du Bois. It'll just happen, and hopefully we'll get past it all. So we'll see what happens. And I will admit transparency here. Yes, Richard Solon is a friend of mine. I've known Richard, you know, but I also admit that I was a pilot and I was in Kingston and I used to fly, I used to do traffic reports in Kingston in airplanes. So I know.
Well, wait a minute. Where did you learn to fly? When? How did that happen?
My boss came to me and said, "Do you want to get off working evenings?" So I said, "What do you mean?" He said, I want to do traffic reports, morning drive and afternoon drive, Monday through Friday, where you'd be in a plane for 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon, and you'd come back to the station and do a little production work in the midday." So I said, "Sure." So I went up, and for the first month or so, Hank Kramer flew me, and then he said, "You know, would you like to learn how to fly?" And and so I said, "Sure." So I got my solo license, and I flew it. I did that job for almost 3 years. I was in the air 4 hours every day, 5 days a week. Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Huh.
One of the perks of being in radio, when you don't get paid much, but you get all those perks, these weird perks like that show up. So I'm just being transparent there that, yes, I've flown small airplanes, and I know that a small airport, they're not going to bring in tons more planes by just providing hangars to the people that keep their planes there. So it's
no, and it's... It just protects the plane, like having a garage. It's like having your car out and parked in the driveway rather than in a garage where you can keep it, out of the weather, you know. So
that's exactly what it is. So we'll see if I fall flat on my face. And the great thing about being a radio person and you predict, if you predict right, everybody remembers. And after a year or so, if you predict wrong, they don't remember. So
no, it's just not written down.
That's
well,
right.
I'm going to remember. And I'm, going to
I'm sure you will.
I'm going to call you to account on this one.
All right. Let's go on to your next story by Sheila Clary, a review of The Tyranny of Merit, What's Become of Common Good.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
No.
Sheila is a really interesting woman, and she's a teacher, too, by the way. But she's reviewed this book at a timely time. It's written by Michael Sandel, and it's a book about why it's called The Tyranny of Merit, and it really explores how people feel as if they're not worth anything. And it's a and it's, it plays right into how this campaign for president is going.
You know, I mean, you know, she points out that nearly two-thirds of Americans do not have a college degree.
Yeah. Which is astonishing, isn't it?
It is astonishing, right. And that, you know, we have valued meritocracy so much that the people who are not part of the meritocracy are feeling completely devalued and resentful.
Yep.
And that's really, you know, I mean, and that's really a major issue.
It's interesting you say that because I was all set to go to Emerson because I wanted to be in radio from the time I was in high school or not. Mm-hmm. And my mother was a single mom at that time. My father had died, and my two brothers and sister were all in college, and she had co-signed loans for them. My oldest brother dropped out of college his last year, thus forfeiting the loan and causing that loan to come due automatically. So when I went to apply with my mother co-signing, I couldn't get a loan to go to college. So what did I do? I just buckled down, went out, and got a job in radio. 50 years later, here I am still doing my radio thing. But you're absolutely right. For some reason, people will look at somebody who's applying for a job, and they might not see college on the resume. And immediately, it's without an explanation or even anything, it's an X. It's a negative. It's a negative.
Yeah, well, you know, she says at the end of her review, what makes the work or the life of a professor or a banker or a writer any better than the work of a carpenter or a mechanic or a lobsterman?
Yeah.
Nothing except our attitudes toward the work and life.
Yeah.
Non-meritocrats, I guess, don't want pity. They want to be respected and valued. Sandel hopes in The Tyranny of Merit to loosen meritocracy's hold on our civic life, but his own life exerts a tight meritocratic grip. So, he has achieved.
And you look at the technical high schools, like we have Oliver Wolcott here that serves our, and the students that come out of those, they go working for electricians, beginning at $25 bucks an hour. They go to work at body shops, working at $25-$30 bucks an hour. I mean, there's plenty of great paying jobs out there.
There are
that are
and,
available.
You know, I think about that every time I call a plumber or an electrician. Yeah. Now they have been trained. You know, they do have, long apprenticeships, and it's expensive to be part of that because there are many years in which you don't get paid and during which you're apprenticing. But they're making more money than doctors.
That's exactly right.
No,
and the insurance is not anywhere as expensive.
And insurance is not nearly so high.
Yeah, it's
and
no.
They're
it's
so busy they can't get. I mean, you can't get one to come.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing about this story, is that.
I think it's really hit on something here.
If people would take the time to really think about this, there are other avenues other than college where you can go out and learn a trade, and then do something that's useful in society. Really.
And frankly, college has become so expensive, and there are many of them that students are going to that are really not worth the investment. Third-rate colleges just to have a college degree where the standards are not high and the student body is not that interesting. And, you wonder, why bother? Get yourself into incredible debt.
It's an interesting
with no
question.
Job at the end.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and and it's one that we should look at it with open eyes. Your next story is a great one because you look at the cultural organizations in not only your area but our area, what the pandemic has done with them, what it means to their future, and you've got an update on the strategy of one of those, and that's the Berkshire Children's Chorus.
Yeah, well, this is run by, you know, this is a very vibrant organization, and Alice Maggio runs this, and it's a tale of how to try to survive in this pandemic, which has, you know, closed all the cultural organizations, has left not only these organizations struggling, but also audiences who, you know, for which these performances and lectures and so on are really a real lift during the summer. It's really going to be a struggle for these organizations to come back to. They're all, you know, they all live on the edge anyways. Not on us, but, you know, on their edge.
Right.
No, it's true, and you know we notice it here at the radio station. I mean, we miss giving the support and getting the support from the Warner Theater, from Tanglewood, from, you know, and that's why we're so appreciative here of the Sharon Playhouse and what they're doing in cooperation with the Movie House and everything, not to make money because they're not making money on this; they're just basically breaking even, but they're still bringing some sort of other entertainment to our area, and if you're a non-for profit, you have a. This is going to affect you not only now, but how you're going to make up going into the future.
Right, right. You lose. I mean, you have people who are accustomed to giving every year and supporting you, and then you break that cycle. You have to rebuild the whole thing.
Yeah, it's
well. Some of them can still do it.
Some of them can, but
it's also part of it that you know, the people who can, like, for example, the Sharon Playhouse, I believe they've sold everything they've done, they've sold out, correct?
Yeah, but they, you know, but if
and it's they're not making
but they're not making any money.
They're not making money, but they are providing a service. They are keeping their names above board in there,
and
but
people are coming, and that is, you know, it's part of the compact. It's like everybody. I was fascinated listening to the meritocracy discussion, and one of the other things that we could jump to with this is the community discussion. Only meaning that you've got to. Everybody is a cog in this particular thing, and everybody. I'm sorry to be general, but kind of needs to do their bit. And that's the only way that you move forward, if you will. That's all.
Yeah.
I wish it was this.
Yeah, well,
course that's oversimplified.
But anyway, this is an interesting article or an interesting letter because it really does describe what an organization like the Berkshire Children's Chorus has been doing. And this is, you know, this is a little bit different because the participation in the chorus on an ongoing basis is, I mean, there are other aspects of it or other benefits other than simply a performance.
Yeah.
It's teaching children about music, it's teaching teamwork, it's fostering friendships, it's fostered opportunities for mentorships. So this benefits the participants almost more than it benefits the audience. And what she's saying is that these kinds of benefits to the participants are being lost. So what they are trying to do is they are having some Zoom presentations. The first one is by a graduate of the Berkshire Children's Chorus, who has created a very interesting career for herself in the food industry in New York City, and she's going to speak about her experience and her experience, and also, you know, what she learned and what the chorus can continue to do even with virtual presentations. So should be quite interesting, and it's, you know, it's focused, you know, less on performance and more on enriching the children who were originally, you know, who would have been participating. So they're trying to fulfill their mission, and but, you know, they can't sing because singing it leads to the airborne transmission of germs. And so they just can't do it. They can't rehearse. The children can't come together. So it's very, you know, distressing for them.
Absolutely. Now,
for the participants.
I want to move on to your next story, because tonight in Falls Village, there's a town meeting being held via Zoom. And it's an important town meeting on the building of affordable housing in the town and the planning and zoning. And there's a lot of people in town that are complaining that this is, you know, Zoom meetings are not good at all. Some people get on and they don't know how to set the levels. They're on the telephone. They're on computers. It's very dysfunctional.
They don't know how to mute them.
That's exactly right. And in Great Barrington, they've been running these town meetings outdoors
in a parking lot.
And that was even suggested for here, but that's not going to happen tonight. But this is a big story. Zoom meetings versus meetings in parking lot. As crazy as it sounds, the parking lot meeting, that is, the most equitable way to do it.
Well, it was a cold night. People are
in
their cars in the parking lot of a high school. And we have a story. What they had to do was to go over some zoning amendments that were left over from the official annual town meeting. And they had to have a special town meeting so people come and park in the parking lot of the high school. And they, the select board are set up on a stand in front of the parking lot. And people listen to the radio, and that's how they can hear what's going on at the
there's a radio frequency that has the speakers.
Yeah.
And so that's how they conduct the business of the meeting. But this is an adaptation of a traditional and revered New England governmental process.
Well.
Its expression in these times is a little bit bizarre, but nevertheless preserves the tradition.
Yeah, I just remember when I used to sit in my car in a high school parking lot at night. That was before basketball games and stuff. And the cold never seemed to affect me. I don't know why, but it never seemed to.
Well, you're lucky.
Well, I wasn't
also,
lucky. But
you know, these meetings go on forever,
yes.
And it's getting dark earlier.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, when we had one in July or August, you know, the days were long and the meeting went on until about 9 o'clock, but it was still light until almost the very end. The last one they had in September, you know, it was dark very early and you couldn't see anymore.
I want
to
get on.
There were 32 items on the warrant to consider. So.
You can't rush through 32 items.
No, you can't.
That's right. You should bring a camper.
All right, we have a minute left for the last story on the on Tanglewood.
Oh, the Boston Symphony is holding these for music lovers. They can still hear performances, what they call the encore performances, which are performances by musicians. It's a whole series of concerts that are online, and it's what the Boston Symphony has been able to offer. Its Tanglewood audience that couldn't go to the Shed this year. So,
and this will go on every Thursday through November 12th.
Yep. So.
And then there'll probably be another series after that.
But. In any case, it was a resourceful and innovative way to maintain the symphonies, provide the music that people expect during the summer.
All right. Well, and they did that with Music Mountain this year. They provided online concerts that people could log into. But I still think we're all waiting for the day where we can go back out and attend all these things. Zoom is great, and these things are great, but it's also humans need interaction, both emotionally and physically.
Everything is better with an audience.
That's it.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, speaking about an audience, the BerkshireEdge.com is where the audience should go, right?
Right.
That's right.
We'll speak to you guys next week.
You don't have to wear a mask to enjoy the Berkshire Edge.
That is true.
All right. We'll speak to you guys next week.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That is the Berkshire Edge on air, and you can find them at the BerkshireEdge.com.